mention this really, thank you to all who are coming this evening, and I wish everybody hatzlacha as we begin new masechta tonight, Masechta Sanhedrin. I thought that as we were beginning new masechta, it would be appropriate to just begin with words of introduction, a general introduction regarding Sanhedrin, and, perhaps start with just some, general hashkafic philosophical thoughts about din. The first source on the page, we're going to start with the page tonight and come to the Gemara in a moment, is a famous Mishnah, actually the last Mishnah, the first paragraph of Masechta Zavos, which teaches the name of Rav Shimon Gamliel, al shlosha devarim ha'olam omed, al hadin v'al ha'emes v'al ha'shalom. Rav Shimon Gamliel teaches that the world, the way we know it, stands literally on three ideals, on three important foundations: din, justice, emes, truth, and shalom, peace. And he quotes the pasuk, emes u'mishpat shalom shiftu b'shareichem. The pasuk quoting all of these three ideas together: emes, mishpat, and shalom, shiftu b'shareichem. So you have this idea that din, which of course is part of the one of the basic themes and foundations of Masechta Sanhedrin, as is emes and shalom, are so fundamental to the world the way we know it. There is another Mishnah, perhaps even more well-known, actually the very beginning of that very parak, which teaches something different. Shimon HaTzadik HaYim HaShayir HaKnesses HaGedola, and Hu HaYa Omer, he said, Al Shlosh HaDavarim HaOlam Omeid, Al HaTor V'Al HaVodav HaGimilas Chasad. So Shimon, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who comes, we presented him out of order, who comes at the end of the first parak, says, Al HaDin V'Al HaEmes HaShalom, and Shimon HaTzadik said actually something different. Torah V'Odav HaGimilas Chasad. So many of the first wonder, why is that the Mishnah over here seems to, these two Mishnahs seem to present us with conflicting, competing ideas? If there was a debate, you would expect that they would be, presented together, two different opinions. But they are presented over here separately, as if to imply that either they're talking about different things, or they're not necessarily competing with each other. So Rabbeinu Yonah says the following, source number three. Hu ha'yomer ha'shlosh d'var ma'olam omer. Tzon olom ha'shib shvil d'var ma'elu nivra olam. Kilimatu Omer, Ashlosh the Barma Olam Kayim. The Enum El Elush Zokakam. The Bein Yonah says there's a difference. Now, actually, according to the Girsa that many of us have, and it's in some spades, this distinction is not as obvious, because both cases say Omeid. However, Bein Yonah had a slightly different Girsa, and he said that the first time it says Omeid, the second time it says Kayim. So the way he explains it is the first Mishnah which says that the world exists for Torah of other Gzimus Chasadim, that means to say why the world was created. B'shvil Elu Nivra Olam. Later on, Din, Emes, and Shalom, those are what allows the world to continue to exist. Al Kain, he says, Anotzrichim Lefarish Ki Omei Shamar Rutzon Olam Ash Nivra Olam B'shvilam B'pnei Shehem Ratan HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The world was created in order to promote the ideals of Torah, Avoda, and Gzimus Chasadim. However, he goes on to say that now that the world exists, the way that we promote these values, the way that we achieve these goals, is through the medium of Torah, Din, Emes, and Shalom. That's Rabbeinu Yonah. The Beis Yosef, at source number four, so he says, I don't really understand why that is so. Take a look at on the second line. He says, V'intomar, V'alo b'shlosha shenivra ha'olam, yastik l'kaimo. The three ideals, the three pillars for which the world was created, Torah, Avodah, Gzimus Chasadim, if they were sufficient to justify the creation of the world, so certainly they should be sufficient for the sustainment of the world. Shemishu sibali lahavos adavar ko shekein shekaimenu. If it was enough to justify creating the world in the first place, so why are they insufficient now that the world has been created? And the Beis Yosef explains something which I think is very important as we begin Masechta Sanhedrin. Yesh Lomer says, Shimon HaTzadik diver kefi zmano, shahi beis hamikdash kayim. Shimon HaTzadik was speaking, Shimon HaTzadik is the first Tana who appears, source number two again, that presented out of order over here, you forgive me. He's speaking when the beis hamikdash was standing. Rishim Gamliel, shahi bezmano churban, at the time of the destruction beis hamikdash, balomar, she'afa pi she'ein beis hamikdash kayim, even though the beis hamikdash is no longer physically in existence, ve'ein lanu avoda, ve'gamin en yucholim lasu ketor gminus chasodim karoi. We no longer have avoda, the worship of the mikdash we don't have. And even Torah gminus chasodim, our ability to carry them out and to promote them has been compromised b'bnei ol ha-golos, because of the difficulties of golos. Nevertheless, he says, even in the absence of these ideals, or with the, or even with our impairment to be able to promote them, we still have other means by which to achieve them. But things that are dumb in the hand. Shahadin sibas kiyum haTorah. Din, justice, that in sense is a reason for the sustainment, the fulfillment of Torah. Shahaover haTorah yamishuhu b'din. Because a person who desecrates Torah, violates the will of the Torah, is deserving of a consequence. V'ha'emes, truth, promotion of truth in the world, tikkun la'avoda. Shayidei avoda, as long as we had the worship of the Mikdash, ha'yisah shechina shavineinu. So that we had the presence, the divine presence among us, v'ha'yinu mishgachim, u'bishmiris ha'emes, yichosama shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nakiv in his palav, shub makam avodas ha'karbana. There was a certain hashgacha, there was a certain protection that the world had through the avoda, because there was a felt presence, a divine presence, a Shekhinah in the world. And the way that we access that today is through our pursuit of Emes, which is the chosam, the seal, the signature of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we come through prayer to recognize that. Bala Shalom, keneged Gemilas Chasadim. And the promotion of peace is one which enables us to achieve the ideals of Gemilas Chesed. Shemitzad Gemilas Chasadim, yes Shalom. Shem lo keno ani yigzol. Because obviously, Gemilas Chesed promotes Shalom. Without Gemilas Chesed, people will feel compelled to steal. And then the Beis Yosef says, "The Efshel Lefayr Shekol Shlosh Devarim Shehizkor Moshim Gamliel Heim BeInyan Adin." And then he says that it could be that all of them relate to Din. And I think this is a very appropriate segue into the beginning of the Masechta. Kibasha Amar Al Adin Hu Talu B'Dayin Ladon Al Mita. When it says in the Mishnah that the world stands on justice, so we are talking now about the Dayan, the judges who have to obviously carry out the Din properly. Vala Emes. That's referring to the witnesses who obviously have to be telling the truth. It's not only the judges and it's not only the witnesses, but even the litigants have to try to pursue shalom. To try to minimize, to mitigate the fighting. Obviously, they have a dispute with each other, okay? And to accept the din, whatever it is, with grace, with acceptance, without holding a grudge. So our discussion of Din, of Shalom, and Emes, which of course are three basic themes which are fundamental to Masechta Sanhedrin, is a gateway not only into this particular area of Halacha, but really it is a gateway to the entire world. And it is, and it always has been, as Chazal tells us, the basis upon which the entire world was founded. Now, very often we know that we have this feeling when you start a Masechta that if I were writing the Masechta, so I would actually begin, you know, with an introduction, with the psukim, but we know that more often than not it doesn't actually work that way, that we sort of parachute in out of nowhere and all of a sudden we find ourselves up to our necks in some very complicated topic. So I'm not trying to outsmart Chazal, and I'm not rewriting the whole book over here, but I just felt also, just by way of basic introduction, we should at least take a look at one pasuk. One pasuk, I can't say that this pasuk is the basis of the entire Masechta. In fact, this is not a pasuk that's cited right away initially in the beginning, but it's a pasuk that we're all familiar with. We just read it several weeks ago in the Parshas Shavua, and it serves again as sort of a basis for this discussion. The pasuk says in the beginning of Parshas Shoftim, Shoftim mishaltrim titen lecha b'chol sha'arecha, asher Hashem lokecha nosein lecha l'shvatecha, the Torah tells us that we are to appoint shoftim, which are judges. Rashi does not appear on the page, but Rashi El Torah tells us that refers to those who decide what the din is, and that includes, of course, not only in personal disputes and matters of civil litigation, but even when it comes to interpretation of Torah law. In Parsha Shoftim and several Pesukim later, the Torah talks about the importance of listening to the Sanhedrin as far as their interpretation, all the mitzvahs in the Torah. So shoftim determine what the law is, and they issue verdicts accordingly. The shoftim, those are the enforcers. Those are the individuals who are appointed with the task of carrying out whatever the rulings of the judges are. And the Torah tells us that we are required to appoint shoftim and shoftim in all of our sha'arecha. Sha'arecha literally means gates, but it means in all of your major cities. And you see, the Torah actually differentiates between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. In Eretz Yisrael, you're required to have a bezdin, not only in every sort of county, major area, but even in each individual city. Chutz La'aretz, you're only required to have batidin set up in regions. V'shaftu asah mishpat tzedek. And the Torah tells us that, of course, the judges are assigned the very important task of carrying out mishpat tzedek. Also, profound statement, thoughts that hopefully second from this are occupying our minds as we make our way closer to the Yimei Adin. And of course, those words which we say every day in our Shmoneh Esrei, Melech Ohev, Tzedakah, U'Mishpat, which we actually change during Esrei Simei Tshuva, Tam Melech HaMishpat, the idea of Mishpat being perhaps absolute justice, and Tzedek implying Rachamim, the two of them together, that is the goal, the objective of the Shotrim. Now the Ramban says, in this context, that the role of the judges are to basically resolve matters of dispute between people. People have arguments with each other, and there is an accusation, an allegation that there's been some wrongdoing. So the Ramban says that's where the Shotrim come in, and the Shotrim as well come in order to enforce it. The Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvos in source number 7 actually says that this mitzvah goes well beyond that. I thought this was very enlightening. I wanted to read it inside because, again, it gives us sort of a broader perspective and reminds us that even today, when we do have some semblance of a bezdin, we're going to talk, no doubt, on many occasions about how modern batidim work, how they operate, and how they operate within the confines of secular law, and what the process of Bezdin is, and we'll also talk about some of the problems that exist in contemporary Batidin. But the Rambam reminds us that there's a whole other component that we shouldn't forget that is part of this mitzvah. Rambam writes, the HaMitzvah HaKuf Ayin Vav, which means the 176 mitzvah of the Torah, Hushativanu Limnos Shoftim Meshotrim, the obligation to appoint judges and enforcers, Sheyachrichu Lasos Mitzvos HaTorah. They are instructed to force, I mean, that's what Yachrichu means, to force, to impose upon the community the observance of Torah. V'yachziru hanoti miderech emes eleha akarcham. And those who, forgive the expression, because, it has certain connotations, but as we say today, those who are off the derech, that's exactly what this means, v'yachziru hanoti miderech, those who are off the derech of truth, to nudge them back on. V'yitzavu la'atos hatov, and to instruct them to do that was right. The Azirum and Ara, and it is the obligation of the Shoftim, the Batidin, to remind us, to speak to the community when things are wrong. V'yamidu hagdarim ala over ashlo yumitzos satorah v'azaroset shrichos la'amunas kol ish v'ish, says the Rambam, and that there should be rules and injunctions in place which make it impossible or discourages each and every person to have to buy in individually to every law of the Torah, which sort of describes what we have today, namely a situation where, each and every person, decides for him or herself, what am I comfortable with? The idea of having shoftim and shotrim is to essentially establish a system by which those decisions are made by an organized, established body of chachamim, and they're there to instruct us. And says the Rambam, the Shotrim are there to make sure that people don't step out of line. Now again, this is profound because the Rambam is describing a society that we can't really relate to. It's important from time to time to sort of remind ourselves what the Torah envisioned, the ideals that the Torah had in mind as to how the Sanhedrin would operate, and what in fact is the role of the judges, of the Shoftim and the Shotrim that are discussed in this context of this mitzvah, not only, as Ramban said, to resolve disputes between Reuben and Shimon, but really to be there as a center not only of learning, but of instruction and enforcement for the entire community. One more technical introductory remark before we actually begin to study Masechah Sanhedrin, and that is the Meiri. The Meiri, very often, in most cases, maybe with no exceptions, begins at the very beginning of every Masechah, and most prakim, to give sort of, and even in the beginning of a new Mishnah, to give sort of an overview of what's about to happen. You know, divide it up before we actually begin. Again, which is sort of helpful so we know what we're going into over here. For those of you who are paying attention, we just finished Maseches Bava Kamma. It took 13 years. I don't think if you would have asked most people, myself included, the first couple of weeks, you know, what is it that we're going to be doing over the next 13 years? I don't know if anybody would necessarily been able to put some of the Meiri outlines from the very beginning. What is it that we are going to be doing in Maseches Sanhedrin? So he writes the following. This is source number 8. V'inyin ha-masechtuhu amnam l'va'er inyin ha-dayonim v'at-hagasam b'chol ha-dinim. The purpose of this Masechta, the main topic of this Masechta Sanhedrin, is to explain, to clarify, to elucidate all the matters of Dayanim, judges, and how they conduct themselves in all dinim, hein b'dinim mamonis, hein b'dinim fashos, which means civil laws, monetary laws, and capital cases. V'inyan he'edim, and included in that, separate from that, but also included in Masechta Sanhedrin, is the topic of edim. Shafi edusam yadunu ha'dayanim sadin. Because it is only through the testimony of witnesses that the judges are able to first deliberate and then execute it in, as well as to discuss and to clarify and to explain the nature of the different misos bezdin, the capital punishments that are outlined in the Torah. And people who are found to be guilty, which punishment they are given. And in this way we see that the Masechta could actually be divided into 6 parts. Harishon, this is going in order, in sequence, so this is really what we're going to see first. First, the Masechta deals with the matter of judges. Kamehim, number 1, how many judges are there? Umihim, hayiru'uyim lakach, and who is fit to serve as a judge? Hasheni, levar shiish ktsasani adam, she'im tachas mamshelis, Mamshaltam, Lios Hem Yecholim Ladonam. The second is that there are certain individuals who are not necessarily subject to the same authority, or they're not subject to the same obligations, rules and obligations as everyone else, included, of course, the Kohen Gadol and the Melech. That's also a very interesting topic, which comes towards the beginning of this Masechta. Hashlishi, the third topic of this Masechta, it was the Var Elizat Sad Hein Donim B'dinim Mamonos B'Makom She'ein Sham Bezin Yuchad Mipi Sanhedrin. What to do in a situation when we do not necessarily have an explicit din of the Sanhedrin? Ve'elu Eidim K'sheim L'Din Al Pi Edusam, and which individuals are fit to serve as witnesses? Val Elizat Sad Bokin As Eidim, and how we examine the witnesses B'dinim Mamonos V'Gomenis Al Din Al Pi Edusam, and what do we need in order to actually reach a conclusion and to deliver a sentence? The fourth topic is that there are things that apply to capital cases, obligations, restrictions, details that do not apply to dinim mamos. This is true when it comes to judges, when it comes to chakiras ha'edim, the interrogation of the witnesses, the fifth topic of this masechta is basically discussing misos bezin, the capital punishments. And who gets what? And then finally, and what we sort of find ourselves with the Masechta sort of segues into naturally is the sixth topic. We talk about some more esoteric issues having to do with the world to come and basic foundations of our belief system. Why? Lahudia, in order to demonstrate to show shalonifku hanidonim imena afapishachatu umesu bavonim ideyadam. Even though people committed the most heinous crimes imaginable, which may have led to their execution, they are still not removed completely in a spiritual sense from the destiny of Klal Yisrael. And so therefore it's appropriate that we conclude such a depressing topic, one which seems to be one of such gloom and doom and such finality, to remind ourselves that Kol Yisrael Yeshalom Chelek L'Yolam Haba, which of course is the basis of the Parachelek, which deals with these topics. Of course, needless to say, we're a little ways off before we get to the Parachelek. That'll be a nice treat for those of us who are hopefully still standing at the end. Now, yes.
The term based in and the terms Sanhedrin, I assume they're not interchangeable.
Excellent. Thank you so much for saying that. What does the word Sanhedrin mean? What does the word Sanhedrin mean? Anybody know what the word Sanhedrin means? First of all, is it a Hebrew word? Is it an Aramaic word? A Greek word? So whatever you said, you're right. If you said Hebrew, you're right. If you said Aramaic, Greek, there's all different opinions. The Tosfos Yom Tov over here in the beginning of Masechta Sanhedrin says, Chatzva Tosfos Loshon Sanhedrin Aramis, that it's an Aramaic word. Nimtza Pamim Rabbis B'Targim Rishalmi B'Targim Ksuvim. Well, Da'at HaRav, he quotes from the Perush of Bar Tanu, which is actually found below in source number 10, from a Mishnah commentary in a Mishnah in Masechta Sota, says Loshon Ivrihu. This is fascinating. It's a Hebrew word, Vuhushay Murkav. It's a combination of two words, Sone Hadras Panim. And the sin is Mischalefes Besamach. So Sanhedrin is actually a compound word. San, the San is like sin. Sina, Sone, Hadrin is Hadras Panim. Namely, those who despise, those who detest showing any sort of favor. In Din, we know that one of the basic obligations of every judge is to remain impartial and not to show a favor to any one of the litigants. The Torah speaks about this, and we're going to speak in great depth within the top context of this Masechta. So Sanhedrin suggests the Perush Bar Tanura is actually means that Sonim Hajus Panim. And there are other explanations as well. It's a Greek word, all different interesting things regarding the etymology. So the question is Sanhedrin, but Bezdin, are those words synonymous? So the answer is they could be. In a general sense, typically when we use the word Sanhedrin, we are referring to one of two governing bodies. Either the Sanhedrin HaGadol, which we will talk about, we actually will be introduced to them in the first Mishnah. The Sanhedrin HaGadol is the Bezdin of 70 or 71. It's my folks, Sanan, how many? And they were the group that actually sat in the Lishkat Gazis in one of the rooms on the side of the Beis HaMikdash. They decided matters of relevance to the entire nation, as well as deliberated matters regarding the interpretation of Torah. So they were, that was the channel through which Torah Shabbat Peh was deliberated and finalized in the world, through the Sanhedrin. That's called the Sanhedrin HaGadol. Then we have smaller Sanhedrins. The smaller Sanhedrin refers to a Bezdin comprised of 23 Dayanim, and they were, for the most part, they were reserved for capital cases. And then finally we have a Bezdin of three. We actually have two different types. We have a Bezdin of three Mumchim, expert judges. We have a Bezdin of three Hedyotos, and we'll even talk about the concept of having, can't call it a Bezdin, but having one judge, when you can have one. So we have 70 or 71, 23, two different types of three, and then one. So typically when you hear the term Bezdin, you know, you're thinking probably three. Sanhedrin, 23. But technically, I think the terms are really synonymous. I got an email from somebody today he asked me, is this the biggest Mishnah in all of Shas? So I didn't know. I didn't have a chance to look it up. I don't know. It's actually not one Mishnah technically, but the way it's found here in the beginning of Masechta is one. In case you were wondering, maybe you weren't, I'm going to do something which I haven't done before in Bava Kamma, but I would have done it if the opportunity called for it, and I think it does over here, and that is that we're not going to learn the entire Mishnah now. We're actually just going to read a few lines. I certainly encourage you, if you want on your own, maybe to study the Mishnah just in advance, to have a heads up as to what's going to come. But we're not going to get stuck over here on the first Talmud for a very long time without going to the Gemara, because the Mishnah over here is very detailed and actually mentions many, many separate, distinct points, each and every one of which can be analyzed, and it is analyzed separately, and so therefore we're going to learn it as such. So the Mishnah begins on Daf Beis Amud Aleph Masechta Sanhedrin by telling us that Dini Mamonos Bishlosha. Dini Mamonos. What are dini mamonos? Monetary laws. Civil laws, disputes between individuals regarding money. Mamon means money. So these matters are adjudicated b'shlosha with three witnesses. Continues the Mishnah, gezeilos v'chavolos b'shlosha. I'm sorry? What did I say? Witnesses, I'm sorry. Three judges. Gezeilos v'chavolos b'shlosha. Gezeilos, matters of theft, and chavolos of injuries, personal injuries, are also adjudicated in front of three judges. The Mishnah then goes on to tell us that there are others, nezek, matters of damage. This could either be damage that's caused by a person or an animal. Chatzi nezek, which we'll discuss another time what that is, but that's half damages, which is sometimes paid. Tashlume kefel, double payments, which applies when it comes to a person who's steals money, a ganav. Tashlumi abba v'chamisha, sometimes there are payments of four times, five times. All of these types of cases are all done bishlosha. So we'll stop over here for now in the Mishnah and just catch our breath. So what is the Mishnah doing? The Mishnah is presenting different categories of Torah law and telling us that these matters are heard in front of a bezdin of three. We don't yet know what qualifications these judges must have. That's going to be a discussion that's going to take place in the very beginning of Gemara, but we know they have to be three. If you take a look at the Mishnah goes on immediately to talk about cases that require 23, and then you're going to see 70 or 71, as I mentioned. So the Mishnah, the style of the Mishnah over here is to sort of start with three and then move our way up. But the Mishnah starts with the famous words, Dini Mamanis Bishlosha. Interesting, we find this other places as well. Tosos very often, the very beginning of the Masechta, asks, you know, why is this Masechta found here? You know, what is the explanation of the sequence between this Masechta and the previous one? What's it doing here? So those who are familiar with, say, the Nezikin know that Nezikin begins with Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, Bava Vasar. Actually, Tosos Nezikin Bava Kama tells us that that used to be one being Masechta. It wasn't called Bava, obviously, I guess. Probably means like the section. So, the gate technically. It was probably called Seder Nezikin. That's what it was. But it was 30 prakim. It was very large. Caleb was also 30, but over here, can you imagine Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, and Bava Vasar, and one, that would be too heavy to carry around. So therefore it was divided into 10, 10, 10. Three different sections. That's what we call Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, and Bava Vasar. Then we have Sanhedrin. So Tosfos says, right over here, on the only Tosfos in the Yomar, Acher Shoshana Dinim B'Tlas Abavi. Once we have all the dinim outlined in the three bavos, again Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, Bava Vasar, Mashmienu B'Kama Danin Osam. So now the Mishnayos present us with the question of how many judges are necessary in order to, you know, to deliberate and to adjudicate these matters. So basically, everything until now was, you know, the laws. And now, we say, okay, so how are the laws applied, you know, before how many judges? So that sort of explains the sequence or the connection between this Masechta and the previous ones. Other Rishonim ask why the Masechta actually begins with the words Dini Mamanis. We'll leave that alone for the moment. But over here, the Mishnah begins by telling us that there are different categories. There's something called Dini Mamanis, Gzeres v'Chavalos. Now, you may be wondering, or maybe not, but in case you're wondering, I'm going to ask you to hold the thought in your head for a moment, why it is that the Mishnah speaks about Dini Mamanis and then gives examples of Dini Mamanis. Because Dini Mamanis is a category, and then Gzeres and Chavalos, and Nezek, Chasi Nezek, Teshem Kefal, these are all examples within that category. Normally, we expect the Mishnah to give us either a rule or examples. But whenever it gives us rules and examples, so we question why. After all, there seems to be superfluous information in this Mishnah. So that's the first question the Gemara is going to ask. Before we get there, I'll ask you to take a look at Rashi on the top of the page. So it's very easy to find Rashi now because it appears on the very top of the page. So first Rashi says, Dini Mamanis v'Shlosha, the Gemara Yafinan Lahu. The Gemara will tell us where we learn that from. Where do we know that there are three? The Torah never states explicitly three judges. The Torah states two witnesses. Actually, the Torah says two and three witnesses. Three judges is not stated explicitly in the Torah, but the Gemara is going to tell us early on where this notion of three judges comes from. Gezelos. So what does Gezelos mean? So before you look inside Rashi, tell me, Gezelos. What does Gezelos mean? Somebody give me an example of what Gezelos are. It's not a trick question. Stealing, okay, so, for example, you steal my pen, you walk over to me right now, broad daylight, you take the pen out of my wallet, or out of my pocket. That's an example of gezel. Good, what else would be an example of gezel? Why do we need more than one example? Obviously we need more than one example, why? So Mishnah says gezelos, there are different types of gezelos. So that's one type, what's another type?
You should give me a house and steal your pen.
Okay, so I don't know if that's called gezel technically, okay, it's good enough, you break it to my house. Okay, good, fraud. Right? The person, you know, he borrows money, let's say, or he's asked to wash something, and then he later denies it, let's say, or he decides to use it. for himself. These are also cases that we would call gezel, at least in a broad sense. So take a look at Rashi. Rashi is very fascinating. Rashi over here. There's much, much discussed on this Rashi. I'll share with you some of the discussions. It's fascinating. It seems like a very simple Rashi, but very profound. It says Rashi gezelos. Kofer b'pikadon. Rashi starts the list of gezelos by saying a person who denies that he has a pikadon in his possession. A pikadon doesn't literally mean object, but typically when you speak out of pikadon, we mean object. An object that was entrusted to a certain individual. Maybe he's what we call a shomer chinam, which means he's watching it for free, or he's a shomer sachar, he's being paid to watch it, so he's like a security guard, or maybe he's renting it, or maybe he's borrowing it. But a person who has someone else's property in his possession, it was given to him. He didn't steal it. And then he's kofer. Kofer means he says, I don't have it, I gave it back to you. Or he denies that he has it. So it says Rashi, Dimi sheshalach bo yad, havi gazlin. From the moment that he is shalach bo yad, which is an expression found in Torah, which means literally he extends his hand, but that means from the moment he takes it for himself, at that point he's a gazlin. Now, anything seem unusual about what Rashi just said? Again, a person denies that he has a pekudim in his possession. From the moment that he starts to misappropriate it, use it for his own purposes, so at that moment he becomes a gazlin. Anything seem out of ordinary in Rashi over there? Okay, so first question is why is Rashi getting so specific over here? Right? Why have to be so specific? Just say Gazelos is kofer pikadon stam. Watch Mishalach Vayad. Also, Rashi, it's not clear.
He's only indicating that considered that from the point of time that he's shown that Vayad before he is okay.
Right. So Rashi seems to imply over here that he's only considered a gazlan from the moment that he, which again means that he abuses it, misuses it, misappropriates it, but not necessarily for the point that he denies that he has it, which raises the question, why does Rashi then even say that he was covered because of it in the first place? So we'll get to that in a moment. Then Rashi says, V'chein, additionally, ha-choteif miyad chadeiro ha-vigazlan. A person who grabs something from his neighbor, from his friend, is also a gazlan. Kigon, and quotes a pasuk from Shmuel Beis, he grabbed the sword from the hand of the Egyptian. So Rashi starts off, what are gezelos? Gezelos is if you have a pikadon in your possession, you deny that you have it, and you misappropriate it, and if you grab something from someone's pocket or hand. Something seems strange over there?
In the first starting out, he gets it legitimately to start with. The second case...
Okay, so there are different cases, but what's a little unusual, yeah?
Seems like he's starting out with a very unusual
right. When I asked what's the case of Gezel, so Herbie said right away, and we didn't prepare beforehand. He could have said anything. He said, I take your pen. So that's, when you think of Gezel, that's what you think of, an act of theft, of an outright theft. But over here, Rashi starts off with the, in a matter which is, even if it's not necessarily controversial, if we all agree that it's theft, but it's a little more complicated, because as was pointed out, over here it came to his hands, the heter, and only later does Rashi say, v'chein, and so too, achotit miyad chaver. So that's strange. And then Rashi says,
it's only strange if you take it in and of itself, but when you compare it to Tashuv Ekeka, which I'm assuming is applying to Geneva, you have to differentiate between them.
Right, but over here, the Mishnah says Gzeilos. Right now we know that there are multiple cases of gezelos. That's why Rashi feels the need to give us many examples. By the way, nothing else over here in the entire Mishnah appears in the plural form, except the gezelos and chavolos. Everything else is nezeh, chasi nezeh. It doesn't say nizokin. It says nezeh, chasi nezeh, mishnah. So that's why Rashi over here feels the need to go ahead and give us several examples, because the Mishnah speaks in the plural. The Mishnah doesn't say gezel, chavola. It says gezelos and chavolos. So we know that there are several cases. So Rashi gives examples, but they seem to be out of sequence. And then Rashi gives an example of something that is not gezel. A vowel, says Rashi, lo ve'velo shileim, lo mikri gazlan. If a person borrows money and he doesn't pay back, that's not called gezel. The milva lehotza nitna. Rashi uses a famous Talmudic expression, which literally means, I don't know if this is a literal translation, milva lehotza nitna means that money that is given to someone as a loan is given to him with the stated understanding that the person is going to spend it. So if I borrow an object, if I borrow your car or your lawnmower or a book, the understanding is that I'm going to return your car, your lawnmower, the book. I'm not going to return another one unless something goes wrong, but normally the understanding is I'm going to return the object. That's not true when you borrow money. If I borrow $100, nobody thinks that I'm going to get the actual $100 bill back. If you give me back $250, that's also okay. And even if you give me $100, it's not the same bill. That's what it means, Zilgah Halot Sadnit. So it says Rashi, if you borrow money from someone you don't pay back, Rashi's not saying it's mutter, but that's not Gezel. Why? Because Gezel can only be in a case where what? Where the object is something which is not yours. Over here, when you borrow money, the money was yours. It was yours to spend, and then it was your obligation to replace it with other money when the loan comes due. So again, just to review, Rashi says, one example is a person who denies that he has a pikadon, the mishashalach bayad, from the moment that he misuses this particular object, he's a gaza. So too, says Rashi, in addition, in a case where a person steals something outright out of somebody's hand, as the Pasuk says, vayigal asachanishni ad amitzri, but that's Rashi, says Rashi, lovavu l'shila, and if you borrow money, you don't pay back, that's not called geza, because milva l'hotza nitna. So let's try to just briefly deal with these questions. Yeah. That's a very good question. We sometimes use gezel in a much broader sense, not necessarily the imamnus. So for example, if you steal someone's sleep, we call that gezel shena, right? So is that also included in this? I don't know, what do you think?
We're talking tangible objects. Right. Probably not.
Right. So the reason I think it's not just it's tangible object. I think we're only talking about over here matters that are, that you can actually sue and collect money for, right? We call that actionable, is that the technical legal term? Right, something that you can actually sue for if you wake somebody up, even if technically you've stolen his sleep and you've committed an isser, if he sues you in court, he's not going to be able to collect any money from you. So we're talking, let's not forget over here, the topic over here is how many judges, what are we talking with judges? Just to prove he's wrong? No, it's to collect money. Well, you're not going to collect money in the case of Gezel Shena. That being said, these are not necessarily the only cases of Gezel, but we're probably talking about tangible, you know, objects, namely in a situation, not only that, in a situation where there was clearly, you know, outright theft as opposed to some sort of indirect loss. Yeah. Okay, good. So you can ask the question a little differently. Forget the sequence. With all due respect, you know, once Rashi told me that Kofi Pikadon is considered Gezel, so then why do you have to tell me the more obvious case? So again, let's not forget over here. We can't shoot the messenger. The reason why Rashi is giving us multiple cases is because the Mishnah, presumably, is because the Mishnah says Gezelos. So once the Mishnah says Gezelos, the Mishnah is directing us to appreciate the fact that there are different types of Gezel. So, you know, Rashi had to offer at least two, and my guess is, in any combination, you could have still asked that question. Even if the sequence was reversed, you could have still said, once you tell me this, why do you have to tell me that? So Rashi over here is offering multiple examples, but the sequence seems a bit odd. If you turn over the page, the Sefer Magaliyos Hayom, one of the classic Achronos, yeah?
The first one is one where you would... All you need to do is to show that he hit me in the head and took my wallet. The first case is much more complicated. The first case already, you need to find out a lot more about what's going on.
Okay.
To analyze the situation, you need to figure out, you know, because Rashi himself says there's two different steps in the process. So that's the kind of thing that you think about. What do you need a judge for? You need judges to analyze all this kind of stuff.
Oh, very good point. So you're saying that Rashi, you know, a Bezdin is most invaluable in situations where we're dealing with a complicated case as opposed to something which is more straightforward. Maybe technically you still need Shoftim, you still need Dayonim, but it's a little more straightforward. That's very interesting. So the Magaliyos Hayom, one of the classic Achronos Sfarim on Masechus Sanhedrin, when I was in 10th grade, we learned Masechus Sanhedrin, the Rabbi Dulitz, and there were two Sfarim that he made us buy. I actually still have them. I don't have many Sfarim from 10th grade. He made us get Sefer Mei Menuchos on Tosos. Anybody remember that Sefer? It's a classic on Shulchan Aruch. It was written by the brother of Meir Kahana. And he explained Tosos. So when we were introduced, you know, immersed heavily in 10th grade for the first time to Tosos, he made us get, and he also made us get this Sefer from Reuven Margolios. He has several Sefarim, all of them, you know, absolutely incredible. He's tremendous Bikiyos and, you know, knowledge and, you know, so it's a great resource in Masechta Sanhedrin. So, you know, I'm starting with easier questions first. In source number 17 on page 2, so Margolios Yom says, number one, I've already said this. The reason why Rashi gives us multiple examples is because the Mishnah says Gzeis v'Chavos. It's important to appreciate, you know, we all know this, but appreciate the brilliance of Rashi. Rashi does not explain to us always why he says what he does and why he doesn't say other things. But we should appreciate why Rashi, Dafk over here gives multiple examples, because the Mishnah says Gzeilos and Chavolos. But the other examples of the Mishnah are not found in such a format. Then in the second paragraph, he says, why does Rashi start off with the more complicated case and then, you know, end up with the more straightforward case of actual steps, stealing something from someone's hand? So he gives a very interesting answer. And I'm just going to say it outside, but if you want, you can read inside. He basically says, you're going to see later on, the next page, the Gemara is going to tell us, where do we learn three judges? So we're going to learn it from the Parsha Mishpatim, Minikra Balabayas El Ha'Elohim. Elohim in that context is not meant as a name of God, but it's actually meant to mean judges. It says Elohim three times, and that's where we learn the idea of three judges. And in what context is that Parsha found? That's talking about what? A case of a Shomer, Shomer Pikadam. So Magalism suggests that the reason why Rashi starts off with the more complicated case is because that, in fact, is the case in which the Torah speaks about three judges. So really, it's not a question on Rashi; it's a question on Kadosh Baruch Hu. But for Rashi, he's starting off with the case that's the most obvious. Not necessarily when we think of theft, but it's the one that's most clearly associated with three judges. Because the three judges which are found in the Torah are found in that context. Then Rashi goes and continues with the maybe case that's more straightforward from our perspective, but that already, that's a leap. That you need Chazal to tell us, just like there are three judges here, by Yishomer, by Kof Pikadon, so through you're going to have three judges in the case of somebody who steals something from somebody else. Okay. Now, the other question we ask several questions. Now, the first question we ask is, why is it that Rashi seems very vague in the very beginning over here? It says, Kofer b'pikadon, a person who denies he has b'pikadon, d'mishashalach v'yahavi gazlan. Again, the more you read these words in Rashi, the more it strikes you that something seems odd over here. Because Rashi says, you deny that you have the b'pikadon in your possession, from the moment that you misuse it, you're a gazlan. Which one is it? Is it one or the other? Is it both? Not clear. So the Aruch Laner, also a classic work on several Masechtos, including Masechtos Sanhedrin, source number 11 on the bottom of the first page. So the Aruch Laner says, "V'Rashi d'matzuzel gzelos d'mishashalach v'yad kashuli cave on the kofer b'pikadon." Since the guy denied that he had the pikadon, okay, so what happened? I borrow again. Let's stick with the lawnmower case. But still, you know, it's still the season. You know, a few months from now we'll talk about snowblowers, but right now it's still in lawnmower mode. So I borrow your lawnmower, and then you come to take it back, and I deny it. I say, well, what lawnmower? I don't have your lawnmower. So why at that point am I a little Mikri Gazlan? Why am I not called a Gazlan at that point? I committed an outright lie, and I'm essentially positioning myself in a way where I'm saying that which is yours, I'm not giving back to you. Even if I have not yet used it to mow my lawn and I haven't given it to someone else and I haven't sold it. But the fact of the matter is, I told you I'm not giving back to you. Shaharei, after all, says, the Gemara Bava Kama says, Hakofer b'pikadon, once a person denies that he has a pikadon, pasul le'edus mitam gazlan. From the moment that he lies and he denies that he has it, from that point on, he can no longer serve as a witness. We already assume that while his integrity has been compromised, the guy is a liar, he can't be trusted. Even though he hasn't actually technically misused the property. We don't require that he first misuses it. So why is it the Rashi is saying over here that Kofer b'pikadon, from the moment that what? That he misappropriates, he misuses. The lulei de mistafina, which means, were I not afraid to say this, I would say the following. Hayanirali, it would seem to me, shenafal tos batakas Rashi, that what we're looking at right now in our Gemara is actually a misprint. There's been an editing error over here. Not Rashi's error, but someone who came later. When it says Mishashalach Tzarachlola, what it should say is, oh, Shashalach. What Rashi says over here is Kofa B'Kadon, and not Dih Mishashalach, rather, oh, Mishashalach. V'nakat Rashi Trei Minigzeus. Rashi is actually over here in this, what we call the first case. It's not one case, it's two cases. Trei Minigzeus B'Kadon. Shuvar Isi, and then says in Aruch HaNer, after I thought of this, guess what I found? B'Chudushi Aran, he writes, and this is the actual words, V'loshim Gezeros Kolel, Kol Masha Adam Zochali Atma Mesha Chaveiro. Gezeros includes any time a person acquires something which doesn't belong to him. Hein Shechatav Eza Chefetz, whether it means he grabs something that doesn't belong to him. O Shashalach Yad, or he misuses something that was given to him. O Kofar B'Kadon, or he denies that he has it. In other words, Zekid Varenu, that's exactly what we're saying. V'lchein Yuzin Ezdai Tegam Barashi, therefore, I think you should correct this. Now, my Gemara that I'm using over here, it's a fancy one over here, I see, yeah. So they have a little letter next to the word Mishashalach, and they point out that it would appear that there's a total sofa over here, there's a mistake over here in Rashi. Some of you Gemaras may note that, others won't. I can assure you that these guys are not going to have that. The article probably does. I mean, it doesn't mean that Yerachaner, you know, predates the printing of this Gemara, but not everything necessarily made it to the page. But in some of the more recent versions, so they try to get as much on the page as they can, so they stick in some extra, you know, notations. But it's important to, you know, when you see this Rashi, it strikes you, you know, what? So again, we didn't make sense to us. Then we see the Yerachaner quotes a Gemara. The Gemara which says that actually, from the moment that a person denies that a Pekadon is was given to him. From that moment already, he's considered to be a gazim. He's pasul edus, to be more technical about it. Okay. Well, obviously, if he's found guilty. I mean, if there are witnesses, that's it. Correct. Correct. But in other words, if he testified in a case after having made that denial, correct. If he's found guilty, he would be considered pasul edus. Yeah. Yes.
Suppose in the scenario where he takes it initially and is just borrowing it, and later on he decides, oh, this is going to be
right.
Fine.
So a Shoel Shalomi Das, again, it's harsh words. A person who borrows something without permission, Nikra Gazra. I don't think it means he's like a Gazra. He is a Gazra.
It's not a scenario where I borrow a lawnmower with the intent of returning it, and then later on I say, you know what, I
No, but in other words, even without that, borrowing a lawnmower without permission is stealing.
I'm saying in the scenario where you ask to borrow the lawnmower, and then at some point later on, and then you say, you know what?
Right. So you just have the thought in your head.
So at that particular point?
No, I don't think so. If you have the thought in your head, let's say, you haven't denied that it's his, and you haven't used it yet after the store, but you have the store, you know, I'm not going to give it back to him. Is that what you're asking? At that point, do you become a Gazlan? Maybe in the eyes of God you do. I don't know. Technically, that it's not, you know, not something that we can...
So is he a Gazlan when he says, no, it's not yours?
It sounds like he has to act...
All we could work is what we have.
We don't know what's going on in the guy's head. Although when you just said, Gary just mentioned a moment ago, you know, it's only from the moment, from he has to actually have been convicted of lying. It's not enough that, you know, that they were accusing him. A person is innocent or proven guilty. I just tell you that when it comes to psula edus, a person can come forward and admit on his own and accuse himself if he feels not kosher as a witness. Last week, a person came into my office. He asked if he could meet with me. A very, very honorable, respected mensch. And he sat down and he looked like he was on the verge of tears. And several seconds later, he actually started to shed tears. I had no idea what was about to come. And he told me that he couldn't get the words out. He borrowed a book from the Beis Medrash. And he told me first how hard he tried finding this book in different places, and he was looking, and he couldn't get it. He went to this bookstore, that bookstore, and he just wanted to copy a few pages. and he doesn't know how, he can't find a sefer. He's looking for it, and he promises he's going to find another one. And he breaks down, and he says, I'm puzzle edus. He was asked to be served as a witness at a wedding, and he said no. It was, quite frankly, it was an awesome sight. I felt terrible for him, but it was such mussar for me to see a person who was, not that I wanted to see him so broken, but he was taking the matter very seriously. He borrowed something. I think the signs are very clear. Don't borrow without permission. He took it. Now he feels bad because he can't find it. And without being convicted in the court of his own mind, he said, I'm posoledos. Now technically, he's not posoledos because he was coming to do shuva. He wrote a check and, mutalach, he's not, but in other words, his thinking at the time was that, I evade. What did I do? I committed. In other words, we can't invalidate him, but he can accuse himself if he knows that he has committed. Anybody who commits, well, I don't want to, get too far off the path at the moment. We're going to have plenty of time to discuss this in later sugyas. But the bottom line is a person who commits aveiros b'mezid, intentionally, certainly, even if they're not necessarily theft, would be considered posel edus. Before he does tshuva, that's correct. Yeah.
So someone is watching the photo, and he has every intention to return it, but he uses it according to the people he got.
Well, it depends, again, if he's using it in a way that he's not permitted to use. Right. If he's a shomer, and the understanding is that it's not his to use, it's only his to watch, and he decides, I've always wanted to drive such a car, and I'd like, even though, so that's correct. That's, that doesn't matter. That's considered correct. What does he have to do? He has to return it, right? The Heshav Zegzelos, he returns it. If something goes wrong at that point, just as a Shomer Chinam, he would have been, let's say, if it was stolen at that point, he'd be putzer. But now that he used it for himself, so now he's responsible to pay for it, right? Now there's been a breach of contract in a sense. Correct. Yeah. Okay. Now, let's just address one other point we get to tonight, and then we never will begin the Gemara next week. I'm sorry, I actually wanted to begin the Gemara tonight, but it's good I just have one more discussion of Rashi, especially because we're starting principles this coming Monday evening, and I was able to get a principle Gemara into this, one other question we had over here in Rashi. Now, you remember the Rashi said, lo v'lo shilem lo mikri gazlan. That a person borrows money, he doesn't pay back, he's not called a gazlan. That's what Rashi says. So, several achronim ask several questions on Rashi. We're going to skip source number 12 because I'm running out of time. The Avni Nezer asks a question based on source number 13. This is actually the Gemara that we saw. If you were present, several weeks ago I gave a shiur between Chamarav and Pruzvol, we actually saw this Gemara. But the background to this Gemara is as follows. The Gemara tells us that Hillel Hazakein instituted what we call today Pruzvol. Pruzvol was instituted as a way of allowing people to collect debts even after Shemitah. The Torah tells us that at the time of Shemitah, the seventh year, not only is there Shemitah's karka, there's even something called Shemitah's ksafim, Shemot kalbam asher yado, asher yashebari yehu lo yigos, you can't press a person to pay you after Shemitah has passed. However, the Gemara tells us that Hillel instituted a takana which says, no, you can't. So the Gemara first explains that Shemitah only works Bizman Hazeh. Since Shemitah is only the Rabbanon, so Pruzvol works Bizman Hazeh. But then the Gemara says, how is it, and I bolded it, because I had a feeling we weren't going to have a lot of time tonight, source number 13 of the bold, just look at these words. How could it be that min HaTorah, there's no Shemitah? Today there's no Shemitah. Why? Because we don't have the majority of the Jewish people living in Israel. V'takinu Rabbanon v'tashameh, and the Rabbanon instituted that there should be Shemitah? How could the Rabbanon institute there should be Shemitah if there's no Shemitah? Why not? What's the problem? The rabbis can do anything they want. So what's the problem of instituting Shemitah? So it says Rashi, take a look at Rashi. Source number 14, V'nimsa halova gazlan al piyam. Then anybody who borrows money is technically considered a gazlan. Why? Because I borrow money, and the Torah says, according to the Torah, there's no Shemitah now. So there's no Shemitah, and I borrow money. What do I have to do? To pay back. Come along to the rabbis, and they say, what? No, you don't have to pay back. How did the rabbis do that? Now they're going to make every bad guy who borrowed money, they're going to turn him into a what? A goslin. So what's the question? Here Rashi says, if you borrow money, you don't pay back. What does Rashi say? You're not a goslin. That's Rashi in Amar Sechta. Says right here, you borrow money, you don't pay back, you're not called a goslin. Rashi in Gittin says explicitly, Nimsa halova goslin apian, that if you steal, excuse me, if you borrow money and you don't pay back, you're a goslin. So that's one of the questions that the Achronim ask over here. First of all, they ask questions from other Gemaras on Rashi. But they say, anyway, Rashi is still saying so. Rashi in Babakama, Rashi in Sanhedrin says, you steal money, you borrow money, you don't pay back, you're not a goslin. Rashi in Gittin says, you borrow money, you don't pay back, you are a goslin. Does anybody have an answer you'd like to suggest? You're a goslin deraisa, there's a goslin deraisa, a goslin derabbanan. Could be. So let's explain. In other words, you're thinking the right way. In other words, you know, I'll give you a hint. We're not going to say Tosofer again. You only get one of those a night. No more mistakes over here in Rashi. There's not a mistake over here. Yeah, so what do you want to say?
Over here, we're saying that Midoraisa and the Sanhedrin is not Godlin because there are principles that were followed here. Whereas by Gittin, if the Rabbanim are coming to say it's Shemitah, then the Rabbanim are coming to say it's not Midoraisa.
No, but it goes the opposite over there. Rashi's saying, how could it be that in our Torah there's no Shemitah, and the rabbis say there is? Then the rabbis are facilitating an act of gezel. The rabbis are basically putting every lov in a situation where he's stealing by not paying back the debt. So the answer, there are several answers, but the most common answer the Achronim give is everybody agrees that borrowing and not paying back is definitely stealing. But the question is, do we call it gezel in the literal sense when it comes to what? All the dinim of tashlume gezel. And this is actually, Bava Kamma, we discuss all the dinim of when you steal, what you have to pay, when you have to pay, who you pay, how much you pay. So the question of tashlume gezel, of something being considered stolen property, so that doesn't apply when it comes to an unpaid debt, because as Rashi says, milva lahotza nitna, if you borrow money, the understanding is it's yours to keep, and then later you're going to have to pay back the debt. So we can never go and look back at that loan and say, no, it's like you stole it, my friend. You didn't steal it. It was given to you. Not only was it given to you to use, it was given to you to use up. And then you'd have to what? Replenish it. You have to pay back later. So when the time comes, you're going to pay it, you're repaying a debt. But if a person intentionally, you know, denies or refuses to pay a debt, of course that's gezel. Of course that's stealing. Without a doubt, that's called gezel. But it's not subject to the dinim of tashlume gezel, which is relevant because over here the Mishnah is saying, dinim mamas b'shlosha, gezelos v'chavos b'shlosha, three dayanim are going to sit and talk about matters of gezel, subject to all the rules of tashlume gezel. Says Rashi, that doesn't apply over here. When it comes to somebody who doesn't pay back a debt, of course he's a goslin. As Rashi in Gittin says, and we'll deal with him. There are ways to deal with him. If there are witnesses, we'll force him to play. But it's not subject to all the being of the laws of Tashlume Gezel. We know the next week, like I said, we'll start with the Gemara on Beis on the Beis. If you want, if you have time over the weekend, it'll be great if you wanted to just take a look at the Nest and the Mishnah. As we go on in the Gemara, we'll come back and take a look at the different pieces of the Mishnah.